Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome to Earth.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Bomb. James Bond.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Your move, creep.
Get off my plane.
Get your ass on.
I feel mean.
Let me see if we cut the Kit Kat a-hole.
Hey, motherfucker.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Everything Action Cast for the week of December 30th, 2013. It's 2014 when we're recording this, but, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
New Year. New rules.
Oh, yeah.
Same action.
Bigger and better than ever. It's 2014, but we can't let 2013 leave before we give our usual top 10 movies of the year and also discuss some of the worst movies of the year. So that's what we're doing for this podcast, special podcast. We're not going to do any news or show and tell or anything like that. We're just going to talk about our top 10 movies of 2013, some worst, and then we're going to get into a quick look ahead to 2014 and then what we're excited for. Why don't we kick it off with, before we end our top 10 list, is there anything, we'll talk about some honorable mentions that didn't make your guys' lists? I got a bunch of, just to kick things off, Evil Dead didn't make my list, but it was super, probably the best horror movie I've seen this year. It was a really solid remake. I think it's probably definitely on your list, right, Joe? We'll get to it, but,
It's definitely, it's got a great place on my list, and I think it's important to say before we get too deep into it, obviously our lists differ, you know what I mean? And I think that's one of the great things about our podcast is that we bring you a lot of different perspectives.
Depending on, how many movies you've seen,
Exactly.
If you don't know, I work at a movie theater and also just go to Redbox pretty much every day, so I saw, 70 movies. I think I totaled up and I saw, 70 movies this year.
Yeah, and I mean, on the converse, me, between, lifting weights and whacking off, I rarely get out to the movies. It's usually, reruns and Netflix and TNT stuff. But in all seriousness, though, just going through the list, looking at 2013 on film, if anything, it was very challenging to sort of narrow it down to 10 because there are some really, solid movies that I had some good things to say about, but I was like, shit, I got no room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Evil Dead is not quite on my list. Place Beyond the Pines was really great. Not quite on my list, though. Frozen was really good. Probably the best anime movie I saw this year.
Didn't see that.
Fast 6. Anchorman 2. Recently saw that. Super funny. Not quite on my list, though. Two Guns and Olympus Has Fallen. Two super solid, old school action movies. Star Trek Into Darkness. Fun. Sort of blockbuster. Benedict Cumberbatch is great in it. It's fun action, not quite on my list. And then The Iceman, which is small. I think it came out a couple of theaters, but it was mostly on DVD. Michael Shannon. Yeah. Just
as himself.
Basically as himself. Yes. Playing, I think it's... Robert Kokinski, who's the most ruthless and prolific mob hitman ever. And then just a couple surprising movies. Now You See Me was pretty dumb, but also pretty fun. It's a fun magic heist movie. And World War Z, not a disaster. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything that didn't quite make your list?
Yeah, I have a few honorable mentions. One of my first honorable mention was Gangster Squad, actually, because I did not want to give that movie a chance. I mean, I thought that it looked a little too gimmicky or whatever, and that when you get that many sort of heavy hitters in a movie that's coming out when it was coming out, I was like, oh, this is definitely B-roll from a better movie that didn't get made. What's the deal? But I liked it, and even if it was basically L.A. Noir, basically down to, the last plot detail, it was still cool to sort of go back to that time for, about an hour and a half, and, solid performances all around And, God, Ryan Gosling, he's just so handsome. So really got to throw that up there. Another honorable mention for me, and this was kind of hard to not throw on my list, just as, like, the curveball shocker, a la Jonah Hex. But Movie 43 is actually an honorable mention for me, and I'll tell you why. Because it had balls, okay? Literally and figuratively. This movie is the sort of movie where I assume that if you had gone to see it in theaters, people would have got up and left. And that's fine. And there are some vignettes that were utterly stupid and just not funny, but some of them had me pissing in my pants. So you know what? Well played, Movie 43. You didn't make my top 10, but you do get an honorable mention. In that same vein, we have Bullet to the Head, because I like what it represented for Sylvester Stallone. It's nice to see him in such a gritty sort of 80s Sly-esque action film that doesn't have to carry the rest of the Expendables cast in it. I'd actually like to see a lot more solo action from Sly, but I understand that at this point in his career, you know, maybe that's not exactly what he's looking for or whatever, and I guess the Expendables being so popular, it's just more economical to keep making those. I get it. You have nothing to prove to us, so that's why Bullet to the Head for me was a treat, and I thought it was a cool movie. I also have Monsters U. I literally just saw it, like, at Christmas, so it almost didn't make my cut. There's just so much other great stuff that came out that I couldn't put it on my list, but as far as, you know, Disney and Pixar movies go, I think this is up there with some of the best. And I really like the universe that they created, too. Like, it basically is an adult movie dressed up as a kid's movie.
It's Revenge of the Nerds, basically, or something.
Oh, exactly. And there's so many little nods to that and stuff, and... You know, it was just all around great. I mean, you can, if you can sit there and be like, I hate this movie, fuck this movie, then I don't want to know you. So it's pretty much that simple. And then this might get me some hisses, but my last honorable mention is Iron Man 3. As you guys know, I've talked about it. It wasn't my favorite. It definitely, to me, was the weakest of the Iron Man movies. And I know that's saying something considering Iron Man 2. But it just didn't do it for me. And for those reasons, I certainly wasn't going to say something as ridiculous as, you know, putting it on a worst five, you know, in my bottom five. But, I just couldn't put it on my top.
I'd say it's on one or two for me too. Definitely, as the summer went on, it lost a lot of, like, a lot of its luster as, like, other things came out, like Pacific Rim and Man of Steel and all these other awesome movies. When it first came out, I was like, oh yeah, Iron Man 3 is awesome. And I was like, you know, thinking about it, it was okay. It was good, but it wasn't, it wasn't great.
Solid movie, but I think I could speak for all of us when I say that it's not quite up to that, like, Iron Man solo standard that we would want to see.
And then it's, I don't think either of you guys saw it, but it's definitely, we'll get to it on my top 10 list, but Thor Dark World just completely blew it away when it came out, so.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it, man. I'm so ashamed.
So, Chris, did you have any honorable mentions before we get into our top 10 lists?
Yeah, I did see Broken City,
God.
Like, that came out, and I was just like, I can't mention it as, like, a good movie or a bad movie. It was all right, because it's just like, Russell Crowe put a good performance as, like, this man.
Russell Crowe is probably the best reason to see that movie, because he's kind of, like, chewing scenery as, like, this, like, super evil mayor.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I get the politics game, but then just, like, that was just a facade against, like, hey, who's sleeping my wife?
and then just, like, standard Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Like, what?
What are you talking about, Maya? Who's sleeping with what, Maya? I don't know.
He's the worst cop in that movie.
He gets fired.
Because he, like, has a charge against him.
Yeah, he has a corrupt past or something.
And then he, like, lied to his current girlfriend about his past, and just, it was so complicated. I was like, why don't you just tell her?
The favorite part is when he, like, freaks out at, like, because they go to the movie premiere. It's like, you banging that guy? I saw him in the movie. He must be banging that guy. I don't know. I'm drunk.
Are you making them pornos? Huh? Huh? I was just like, what?
And then she just disappears and is gone for the rest of the movie.
No, she comes back at the end.
Did she? I thought she just disappeared and they never mentioned her again.
No, she comes back and she's like, oh, by the way, like, I knew all along about your secret.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. Like, it was just so, like, forced. It was just like, what?
All right, I guess so. I don't know.
Yeah, so, like, it's not a terrible movie, but it's not, like, a good movie. It's for what it was, people thought it would be, like, an action-packed movie. It's not. There's a bunch of guys yelling.
Well, I don't know, because what was that, February or something? When it came out? End of January?
It came out, like, March, I think. Like, very... I remember seeing ads for it.
You know what you're getting if it's...
Yeah, it's just, like, early spring movie.
It's like pretty much every movie that comes out in like the first couple months is going to end up on Netflix at some point. So,
yeah, sooner rather than later.
Another movie I liked that we haven't mentioned at all until I watched it recently was Stroker.
Is Stoker or Stroker? Stoker. Yeah.
Is it Stoker or Stroker? Because it looks like Stroker.
I think it's Stoker.
Yeah, it's Stoker. Yeah.
So, Stoker is a movie about a really messed up family, and,
What Korean director that? The Kim Ji-woon?
Kim Ji-woon?
Oh, no, I think that was...
Park Chan-wook.
Yeah, Park Chan-wook, yep.
Park Chan, yeah. So, the same person who made, Old Boy made this. And so, it's... He's got this weird theme, his directing themes, just, like, fucked up family situational... dramas, usually insensual family situational dramas. And in this movie, it's about this like college age girl who has a freaky like Dexter like personality where it's like she doesn't understand like emotional shit, but she's like way too smart for her own good. And she meets her creepy estranged uncle who just comes back in her life, and her mom, like a recently widowed mom, is hitting on this uncle. And the uncle is, like, playing both the mom and the niece into, like, hey, like, I like both your affections. Like, who will, like, I guess, like, appease me? And just, like, weird shit like that. Eventually it gets to the point where, like, both the uncle and the niece have, like, psychotic tendencies. And it's really creepy, and it's paced really well where, like, you really can't, you don't know where this is going. Because it's, like, oh, like, it's so creepy, you know? Like, it's just the plot and the tension. And the fact that Anna Nicole Smith is just crying. Nicole Kidman's in it. And she's, like, the widow mom that's like, oh, I need a man in my life. You don't need him. And it's just like, oh, you're a terrible mom. And, this movie had no marketing. It probably had, like, better marketing overseas, but just because... like creepy incestual plots in American movies, like they don't market well.
Not particularly, no.
No. I mean, recently in Game of Thrones, but that's new. So it's a hidden gem. Like maybe years from now, people would be like, "Oh, this was a very smart movie."
It was probably a better debut than I think we all liked it, but. I think it was Kim Ji-woon who directed, like, The Host and stuff and a bunch of other movies. Last Stand. The Arnold movie.
Last Stand. We liked it. We enjoyed it for what it was. It wasn't going to try to change the action genre. It was just going to play nod to, like, old westerns. Yeah. We were all pretty happy when that dude got the killable deputy guy got killed. And we're like, oh, like basically they're Dewey. Yeah. Like, oh, Dewey.
Oh, probably I should have mentioned Escape Plan as an honorable mention.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, anything else, Chris?
No, I mean, some of the things I saw, you guys saw too, yep. So I don't need to.
Let's get right into it. I think, Chris, you and I had the same number 10 for our top 10 list.
Really? Yeah. No.
Only God Forgives.
Yeah. It's a very strange movie to like, but it stays with
it. It's super, like, pretty much everyone either liked it or just absolutely despised it, everyone who saw it. Obviously, Chris, you and I are, like, on the like category. Just, super, super stylish. Like, probably one of the most stylish movies of the year. Everything's just shot with, like, there's, like, basically no natural light in this movie. It's all just, like, crazy neons and crazy colors and crazy angles.
The Joel Schumacher.
Yeah. Another one from Ryan Gosling, who had a pretty awesome year. He's actually, I mean, I would say he's not really the main character, though, even though he's, like, top billed and everything, but,
I guess the American audience wanted him to be the, like relatable character, but the movie's not really about him.
It's about Chang, the crazy samurai Thai cop who murders people and then sings karaoke.
Which is a thing they do.
Apparently, yep. And, yeah, it's just, like, typical of, like, other Nicholas Winding Refn movies, like, just super brutal violence and kind of, like, not really, doesn't really have a plot. And some weird, like, sexual overtones between, like, Ryan Gosling and his mom and other things.
It's just that Thailand in general is, like, just like any other seedy underworld, but the fact that, like, everyone's corrupt, mm-hmm. everyone, like, it's nice, because, like, there's, like, an order to the corruptness, where it's like, yeah, we're just violent fucking people, but we have a system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, definitely, if you go in expecting, like, a straightforward, like, crime thriller or something, you're gonna be super, super disappointed. If you go in with, like, knowing other Nicholas Winding Refn movies, like Valhalla Rising or Bronson or Drive, and like you kind of know what you're expecting. This kind of it's just like a cool, super violent, just like experience, basically. It's Chris Nye's number 10. Yeah. So Joe, what do you have for your number 10?
To totally change pace, my number 10 was The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. And I'll tell you why. That movie was fucking hysterical. And you know what? It didn't really look like one of those movies that had a chance. You know what I mean? It looked like one of those silly, sort of like write it off, watch it on a plane movies.
Comedy Central in like a year.
Yeah, at best, yeah. Right? But wow, like I really wasn't expecting much going into it, but it was just like the subtle things in this movie that were so goddamn hilarious. Everything from Steve Buscemi being the like lovely assistant for Steve Carell to like the little dance they do on stage. Jim Carrey, of course, is just I'm hard pressed to find movies where I absolutely couldn't stand Jim Carrey. You know what I mean? Very rarely is he what's wrong with a movie, if you ask me. But I was just blown away. I really enjoyed it. It was a good family movie. James Gandolfini had an unexpectedly, big and I guess like anti Tony Soprano, but still kind of like Tony Soprano role in the movie. Which I don't think really was billed or advertised much. I think he might have been in a few seconds of the trailer, but I was kind of shocked when he showed up and that he was as big of a part as he was in the film. So that was cool. And especially because I saw it right after he died, so I was, you know, sad to begin with. But then that also made it kind of sad because I was like, oh, maybe he could be in other stuff. Oh, not so much. But, yeah, I would say that if you're a fan of comedy, if you're a fan of Steve Carell, obviously Jim Carrey, check it out. Cause it's a pretty solid comedy all around and it's definitely good for a few laughs.
Mm-hmm. If we were doing just like a top five comedies, I would say it'd probably be like number five for me.
Yeah. Oh, sure. It was solid. I mean, it's not, obviously it's not for everyone.
It was top 10, a super great year for comedies.
It was. Yeah, for sure. Comedy and horror.
Yes,
man.
I think those are definitely two like big genres for this year.
Yeah, and those are usually the hardest to find. Mm-hmm, I think you know.
So let's move on to our number nines. My number nine is I just saw it actually just recently, American Hustle.
Hmm.
Which
jealous?
Which
I want to see. It.
Actually, I had it higher, and then I saw Wolf of Wall Street, and that was like a. I'll get to it in a little bit, but it was like a cocaine-fueled steam engine that just, like, destroyed everything. And it kind of made American Hustle seem a little slow and a little... I mean, it's not boring, but it just made it seem boring in comparison to Wolf of Wall Street, where this is, like, insanity happening every, like, 5 minutes. But yeah, American Hustle is just another fantastic movie from David O. Russell. With, like, it's like basically, like, he's assembled, like, his, like, expendables of, like... Everyone who's been in his movies so far of, like, Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence. Only one missing is Mark Wahlberg for some reason. But, yeah, I mean, Christian Bale, just amazing as usual. Like, he completely changed his appearance again. Like, he has this, like, absolutely horrific, like, comb-over and, like, a super, like, paunchy stomach. And just, like, almost unrecognizable as Christian Bale. And it's just, like, this fun sort of, I don't know, it's kind of like, well, it's like a con heist movie kind of, but it's like based on real events in the 70s of the FBI doing this abscam scam, which is they were trying to like catch corrupt politicians by having them take money or like donate money to like this fake Arab sheik. And basically, like I've said, bribes and all this other stuff. And so it's basically like them, like all four of the characters going like, basically, Bradley Cooper is an FBI agent. He catches Christian Bale and Amy Adams, who are like a pair of con artists, and then recruits them to like pull off this scam with him. And it's sort of like them, like everyone's sort of like trying to con each other and basically just backstabbing each other and all this other stuff going on. But yeah, I mean, definitely, if you like The Fighter, if you like Silver Linings Playbook, I mean, this is like basically this is like the turkey for David O. Russell. It's probably gonna get a ton of like Oscar nominations too, so. But yeah, I mean, everybody in it's amazing, it's just like a super interesting story. So definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it yet. Chris, what's your number 9?
My number 9 was Olympus Has Fallen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the like really cheesy updates to like North Korea just being this like this like really somehow
superpower.
Cooperative superpower, yeah. Like they red dawned their way into the White House.
They were somehow. Well. I mean, a little bit more than just like red dawn of like we have a magic box or something. But
well, yeah. So like red dawn quite, like, was like cheesy. But this
phone had a little bit more subterfuge going on.
Right. Like it had like we're just gonna brute force our way, you know, and then we're just gonna have like this weird trap where we have. Basically, one of our best commando, like, generals with the president and all his, like, all just, like, the needed people to have a nuclear countdown.
Yeah. The crazy, which, like I think it was Cerberus or something, the crazy, like,
nuclear missile. Yeah. They had no contingency plan. Yeah. Like, you figure the Cerberus is a contingency plan. You just need, but, like, every other plan needs a contingency plan. So I like that. And I felt like this was, like, a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, it outdid the actual Die Hard movie that came out this year, which a lot of people forgot A Good Day Die Hard came out this year, but yeah, it did, and it was mediocre, so.
And that's why I was like, you can skip the opening where Gerard Butler's like, oh, like, I try to save the wife, but I couldn't, and I was like, Ashley Judd was in this movie? And I was like, oh, no, she isn't. And then, the fact that he just gets, like, shit canned for, like, not being...
Because of weather.
Yeah, because there's like I was trying to figure out what hit their car.
Yeah, it was
in the beginning.
Like I'm assuming it's like a giant tree? Chunk of ice, but then like where the hell did it come from?
Yeah, and I was like, whatever motorcade this was, just did a terrible job of like, wouldn't there be a plow or something leading this like presidential thing through like the campground or whatever they go for vacations? Mm-hmm.
It has, like, straight up, like, Die Hard. Like, they just took scenes from Die Hard and, like, recreated them, basically.
Oh, you know, even when they introduce, like, villains, like, I don't want to spoil too much, but, like, when obvious people are like, I'm not evil, let's hang out. Like, they're just like, come on.
There's a scene that's, like, there's a scene that is straight up the, like, Hans pretending to be American scene.
Yes. Yes. It's like, oh, if your biggest problem... is a certain type of nation, and that certain type of nation has the people in the same room as you, you've messed up on your security detail. So.
And it definitely, it blew, like, I don't know if you guys saw, but there was a lot of people like, White House Down was super fun, guys. It was better than Olympus Has Fallen. And, like, we'll get to it, but, like, White House Down was a bloated, like, train wreck of a movie. And Olympus Has Fallen was just like.
Was it?
Yeah, what?
Again, I didn't see White House Down.
White House Down was like over 2 hours long, and it was just like never ending. And then Olympus Has Fallen was like this super like stripped down, just like old school diehard action movie that was way better than anything Blazing Star did. So,
you know, this movie was missing just like one liners from Gerard Butler.
He had a couple,
but not like Lockdown.
Oh, you know, like Guy Pearce just like riffing off like just like every single line the Guy Pearce had in Lockdown was like a lockout,
yeah. Like, just, like, making fun of, like, his support, making fun of, like, the president's daughter, making fun of just, like, the situation.
Yeah.
Gerard Butler's kind of like, well, I'm back in business. Like, this is great.
It was a little grim, but he had a couple.
Yeah, but it's more serious, yeah. You know? It's actually, like, what would happen.
When he did make them, they were pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's it for me for Holmes Has Fallen. What was your number 9, Joe?
My number 9 was also Olympus.
Oh, there
Fallen.
We go.
Yeah, so pretty much piggybacking off what Chris had to say, you know, I agree. I think it was, you know, very much in the spirit of Die Hard, but, you know, the original.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it didn't really need the one-liner, so I wasn't really feeling like it was missing that. But, yeah, just all around, like, when it was, you know, when there were action sequences, they were, you know, brutal, you know, like there was some really great stuff going on here as far as choreography and all that stuff. But even like, you know, the killing of hostages and stuff like that, like it's pretty in your face. Like it's not like that classic 80s formula where it's like gunshot cutaway and then people's reactions, like, you know, you see some shit go down and like it actually, you know, gets some emotion out of you too, you know.
It was an incredibly welcome, like, hard R.
Yes, exactly. That's probably a much more concise way to put it for our
audience,
especially
like,
but
I think it was it 2012 where it was just like every movie was a PG-13 and awful.
Give me a break. Yeah. So it definitely a welcome hard R and a critical and commercial success. So I'm hoping that people kind of catch on and they're like, oh, okay, so these kind of movies aren't just like a relic from the 80s.
London Has Fallen is like coming sometime in the near future.
Right. Yeah, no, that's awesome. But I mean, think about it. Like, you know, when it's very rare that you get a movie that you could kind of put up there with Die Hard or like a Lethal Weapon or something like that, you know? And I think that maybe not as much, you know, Lethal Weapon, mm-hmm. but in that sort of like caliber of movie. And I think that this is definitely up there. So whether or not it becomes like an actual franchise or just has this one sequel, I don't think that's as important as the fact that we got one really kick-ass action movie out of this that, you know, we've already seen a copycat, but I'm just hoping that that sort of approach comes back a little bit, kind of like what I guess what Insidious did for American Horror. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of hoping that the same thing happens with action now.
So my number 8 is The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
Smaug!
A great second chapter to this. Maybe it didn't need to be a trilogy, but it's a trilogy, so I guess it's fine. But to the Hobbit trilogy, Peter Jackson's doing some really great action sequences in it this time. There's a part where like the dwarves and Bilbo are like getting chased in barrels by orcs and also Legolas and the new elf Toriel, and just like constantly things happen. Like there's constantly people like jumping out of barrels and into barrels and like off into like orcs flying at them and getting thrown into the river, and just like it's one of the best like in creative action sequences of the year. And it's worth like we're checking out alone just for Smaug himself, because it's this perfect blending of like Weta CG that's like on par or surpasses like Gollum and King Kong, along with like a perfect like voicing by Benedict Cumberbatch of like he's like super arrogant and like super like you can tell like he's like this like alpha, like basically the apex predator of like Lord of the Rings, and he's just like he could basically kill anyone he wanted in any second. He's just gonna toy with everybody. And just lots of like expanding of like the Hobbit universe they're building up right now, and definitely excited for the third and final chapter next year. So I mean, if you haven't seen any of the Hobbit movies, they definitely check them out. because it's not quite up to Lord of the Rings level, but if you like want more Lord of the Rings, like this is gonna be the best you're gonna get for probably a long time. So yeah, number 8, Hobbit: Desolation of Smaug. Chris, what's your number 8?
My number 8 was G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very surprising myself. That's why it's not
latest,
like...
The latest benefactor of The Rock, like, revitalizing your franchise. Like,
it's proven the fact that you add Rock to a weird franchise, and it will revitalize some to some mm-hmm. degree. The only reason it's on my top 8 is because I was surprised how well the story had to readjust itself to kind of follow the comic story better.
Yeah, it definitely felt more G.I. Joe than the first movie.
Yeah, it definitely got like it definitely had some help from like Nerd Rage somewhere, where someone was like, okay, we should probably proofread our work this time and make sure like our source material is involved.
Like it's not they're not Transformers or whatever. Like they don't need. They're the most elite soldiers in the world. They don't need like goddamn like spacesuits.
And like the opening sequence proves that they're a very efficient team. Like that is what G.I. Joe should have been. Like yeah, they didn't have crazy costumes. Like you know, like in G.I. Joe, there's no like uniformity really.
Yeah, there's no shipwreck in this movie, which is a shame.
There's no like weird guy that has like is either overpowered or underpowered.
Or like a snow job whose like only job's to ski.
Yeah, like just granted that's what I'm used to, but this is like okay, this is more realistic. Like you wouldn't have like some guy whose main weapon is his feet, like or like his main weapon is like nunchucks in a fucking like gunfight, yeah. Like just things like that. It makes sense.
There's no like William Refrigerator Perry. With his like football chain or something, whatever the hell he had.
Right, yeah, or Sergeant Slaughter, who didn't actually fight a lot. He just was the training sergeant. So, in this movie, they pick it up almost like a few months after the first movie, so there's some time they can just kind of explain, and they bring back Storm Shadow pretty fast in a nice fashion where it's a twist, because I was all like, yeah, okay, they capture Snake Eyes, and oh no, it's not Storm Shadow, and he's got a cool, like, lab fight, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And, they fix Cobra Commander, so he actually looks like Cobra Commander now?
Yes, yes, they made him actually look more, like, menacing, and not just like a weird doctor.
like melting Jason X.
And visually it looks nice. Like it's not like this movie was made under budget. Like they put some time into it. They definitely figured out like where to market, like to really spice up scenes to kind of get that Michael Bay explosion looks.
They fucking blow up London, all of London.
Oh, that. Well, like for no reason. It's like near the end of the movie too. Not to spoil much, but it's just like, oh hey, we blew up London just to say we could, and it's like, oh. Wow, Europe is getting its ass whipped in this G.I. Joe.
I do appreciate they get blown up with, like, a very, like, Cobra-style weapon of, like, crazy satellite weapon.
A tungsten rod that just, they just drop tungsten, which was like, oh, that's actually pretty cool, because the theory was, like, if you drop something and the gravity, like, takes more effect on it, where you don't use a nuclear bomb, like, it's clean terrorism again.
There's a pretty hilarious scene leading up to that point, too, with, like, the president taunting everybody.
Oh, yeah, that part was cool. Like, that just arrogance and, like, oh, by the way.
Jonathan Pryce is just, like, having a blast, you can tell, in this movie. Because usually he plays, like, he's, like, super, like, stodgy, like, British dudes. But he's back to, like, Bond villain. Like, because he was the Bond villain in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah,
so he's, like, basically, like, back in that mode, which is pretty great.
And I like the part where, like, there's like blatant marketing of certain things, like he's playing Angry Birds or like product placement, but you can ignore that. But what really got me was when they actually solved the Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes thing.
thanks to RZA.
I was like, I like that. I don't know why, but I like that.
It's like, yo, y'all, go check out Man with Iron Fists for more action. Hey.
Like, yeah, it's a little questionable how he's, like, the only blind black guy martial art master in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. So. That was my number.
I mean, it was definitely fun. It's definitely.
Oh, it's a fun movie. That's what's good.
If we were doing like a top 20, it'd probably be on my list, but.
Yeah, but the thing is, again, like my I warned everyone, my list was very limited because I didn't see exactly a lot of 2013 movies.
Yeah.
So, but all right, that's my number eight. Joe, you're number eight.
My number eight was Mama. I thought that Mama was a very solid horror movie. The things that Mama does right for me were extremely well done. So, like, the creepiness of this movie, it's going to make your skin crawl. I mean, it's very atmospheric. It's very spooky, kind of like the first two Silent Hill games, but a little more exaggerated and, like, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari-ish. Like, it's very surreal at times. Mm-hmm. But it still keeps itself in check. So it's surreal without being, like, totally Pan's Labyrinth-esque. But, yeah, overall, tremendously solid horror movie. The only thing that ruins it for me is, like, the last 20 minutes, because, as I've said on the podcast before, the wheels just fall off. And Guillermo del Toro has actually said in some interviews that for the original creator and director of the original short, because this movie was based off of a 3-minute short, just like a directorial demo, basically, mm-hmm. by Andres Muschietti, just to show off his chops and like his sense of pacing and all that shit. So he basically said in interviews, like, yeah, we can get this movie made for you in Hollywood, and I'm going to go to bat for you and get you, you know, as much control over it as I can possibly get you. But you just got to understand that it's your movie, but it's also not your movie. Which sounds cryptic, but watch the last 20 minutes of Mama and you'll understand how it's his movie, but at the end of the day, it's also not his movie. So I would be very curious to see, I guess on a like Blu-ray release or whatever, like if there was an alternate ending or if there were like, if there was commentary that made it about, you know, what ideas for the original ending as the director intended it to be would have been. Because it seems like too complete. It seems like you have this ass-kicking horror movie for like 80% of the time you're watching it, and then that last 20% is just like, wait, whose movie is this? Like, what the hell? Like, so it's not enough to ruin it. It's still very good and deserves to be where it is. But goddamn, I wonder if it couldn't have been higher with a better sort of final act.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess my number seven, moving on, is, I did a tie, because I wanted to make sure I got both of these on the list, and they're kind of like the opposite sides of the same coin, but This is the End and The World's End are my number seven.
Cool.
I would say probably tied for the funniest movies I've seen this year. This is the End, and they're both like, there's this weird, like, apocalyptic comedy thing that was going on this year. These are the two best ones that came out of that. And, I mean, they're both great for kind of, like, different reasons. This is the End is, like, super over the top, and, like, you get, like, these exaggerated versions of all these celebrities, like James Franco and Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill. And World's End is the resolution to the Cornetto trilogy, so it's Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, now World's End, and it's a little bit more low-key British humor, but then it's also balanced out by, like, just ridiculous action with, like, these, like, old friends going on this pub crawl, like, have to fight evil robots, and just turns into, like, this ridiculous action movie. But, yeah, I mean, they were both just super hilarious. I think This is the End has probably the funniest scene of the entire year, though. With the, like, porno mag debate between James Franco and Daniel Craig, yeah. Which is, like, I literally fell off my couch watching that scene the first time I saw it.
Well, Danny McBride just steals everything that he's in like, the best way, so, yeah, like,
yeah,
no one was ready for that, even if he's bound in
damn. This is the end, like, he gets introduced twice in that movie, and both times it's just, like, oh god, Danny McBride's here.
Yep. How great are the cameos in that movie, by the way?
Oh my god, yeah. This is the end, like, this is the end, yeah. The beginning of that movie, just like, oh, it's that person, it's them. And then they all die horribly.
And the end, too, even when they reintroduce Danny McBride, like, his gimp, and we'll just kind of leave it at the end.
And, like, who's waiting in heaven?
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, both, like, if you haven't seen either of those, they're both just, like, super, like, ridiculous, hilarious. So tie for number seven. So, Chris, what's your number seven?
My number seven was Star Trek Into Darkness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did enjoy that it's, you know, still within that feel of the first movie, where they're, like, kind of recanting the lore on certain parts, and they're really going to, like, the mission, and they're trying to say, like, oh, like, not every character, not every, like, scenario has been fleshed out, which, like, yet, you know, like, they're still exploring, like, what would happen if, like, Spock had to sacrifice himself, or, like, what would happen if, like, the big decisions came down and everyone had to, like, figure out, like, to rely on each other. And of course, like, watching Scotty, like, just pretty much give, like, everyone the finger. I was like, hey, like, don't blame me if shit goes wrong. It's like, leaves. And he's at his own little subplot. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reintroduction of Khan, where...
The worst kept secret of the year.
I think what it took maybe like a week before people were like, "Is he Khan?"
Yeah,
and then that was it. It was like, no,
he's like, well, John Harrison.
No. And people were like, "No, this is oddly familiar from like the TV episode where they first introduced Khan, and he's not like a villain yet." And yeah, like it just this is what it's like. The one thing I didn't like at all was the reason they have Khan and his mission and the like the hostage situation. I was just like, okay, cool though, like weird tension, but as soon as like you figure out like the point, it wasn't exactly like mind breaking, like wasn't like, oh wow, that was a great twist. I was like, well, I kind of figured. So again, it's great to have like basically super Sherlock, who for some strange reason is good at like space karate, and then the epic like space like the submission fight or the end.
Yep.
Pretty cool. I did like that they explore like the seedy future underbellies of like dive bars and like the network connections. Because they, like, most Star Trek movies, like,
everything's
at all,
like
they
perfect,
don't ever,
yeah.
Like, yeah, they don't, but no, there's certain sections that's, like, not perfect. Like, it's still pretty good, but it's still, like, in the future, they're still gonna be, like, shady. You know, they're still gonna be, like, underhand trades and stuff. So, I enjoyed it. Like, it visually looked nice. Again, J.J. movies always look nice. They never are disappointing in the CG factor. Or sets. Really interesting, like, background sets. But, yeah, it didn't quite, like, rank up any higher.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, you're number seven.
Okay, so my number seven was Pacific Rim. I thought that just the fact that a movie about monsters versus robots got made and was as epic and gnarly to watch as it was... could have put it at number one, like, at least theoretically.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much from the first poster for this movie, I was like, okay, and when's that coming out? 2013? Okay, well, that's on my top 10 list. Yeah, it was just incredible visually. The story was a little weak, the acting wasn't great, although Idris Elba was just, you know, badass as usual. And even Charlie Hunnam... Yeah, and Charlie Hunnam held his own too, but goddamn, there was just some really terrible dialogue in there, you know. And I know that that's not like necessarily the actor's fault, because they're not the ones who get a say in like what takes make it into the movie. Mm-hmm. but at times it kind of felt like a cheesy, like, high school it felt like an episode of Degrassi at times. It's like when they tried to be dramatic.
It takes stuff from, like, just, like, basically pulled whole hog from, like, Top Gun and Independence Day and, like...
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it followed those formulas to the T, but, I mean, as far as, like, the performances go, and as far as, like, the whole, like, melodrama of it, like, I would have been totally content with, I guess, a half hour more of just robots kicking the shit out of giant monsters, instead of, like, trying to explain why this guy misses his brother, or why this little girl, like, still has nightmares. But I digress. There is some very cool shit going on here. Charlie Day, hilarious. Ron Perlman, great. And, I'm hoping that there's a sequel. Because that movie apparently was, like, the biggest movie of the century, like, overseas.
Yeah, it didn't do great here, but, it just blew up and, like... Asia and all over the place. Yeah.
Well, you had to kind of, like, imagine that would be the case.
Yeah.
Like, it was going to do well overseas, but, like, it outperformed overseas. So that was a little unexpected, but goddamn. Even if that's just, like, the only... Even if it begins and ends with Pacific Rim, like, it's still an awesome movie to own. I mean, I went out and bought it, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yep.
Throw in some surround sound and just watch... monsters fight robots. Come on,
the Hong Kong battle is probably arguably the best action sequence of the year.
Oh, for sure, and that's why I'm saying, like, on concept alone, and like the visuals alone, this could have been number mm-hmm. one. It really could have been, but there's just a lot of stuff in it that, you know, two steps forward, one step back, that kind of thing. But hey, I want mm-hmm. more. I'll be the first in line.
So my number six is Captain Phillips, which I don't think either of you guys saw.
Nope.
Is that like Captain Corelli's mandolin?
Kind of.
Is this the unofficial prequel to Saving Mr. Banks?
Yeah. But yeah, it's based on a true story of the 2009 like Somali pirate hostage situation that happened. Tom Hanks is Captain Phillips. And it's just, it was crazy because it was like, it was basically the middle of October, like, just back to back, it was like Gravity and Captain Phillips. And it was just like, probably the most intense movie experiences you could have the entire year were like back to back. It's just super intense, super great thriller. Paul Greengrass, like, doing, like, not quite crazy handheld stuff, but like, does enough handouts, so it's like, it makes you put you right in sort of that situation with, like, Tom Hanks and everybody. And does a great, there's a lot of debate, like, if this is actually how it went down. A lot of people are saying it, not really, but, it's a little bit diehard-esque, because, like, they gotta, like, figure out a way to outsmart these pirates, and then they don't really, then it turns like this, like, standoff between the Somali pirates and, like, basically the entire U.S. Navy. It's just the way it's shot and everything, it's super intense and just makes you feel like you're right in the thick of everything. It also does a great job of, like, not really, it doesn't make the pirates, like, just, like, blatantly evil. Like, it does a great job of, like, making you, like, kind of, like, see the pirate side as well and, like, kind of, like, see where they're coming from. Obviously, what they're doing is terrible, but, like, it's not like they're, like, foaming at the mouth, like, evil, like death to America people. They're just, like, this is the only way they could possibly survive in, like, Somalia.
I do like the fact that they look all, like, they're terribly malnourished, you know? So, like, they don't look, like, imposing.
Yeah, I mean, it's either they hijack ships or they starve to death, so.
Right. Because it's like, oh, we think of, like, these people on paper as, like, orcs, basically, from, like, Lord of the Rings, where, like, they're savages. Yeah. But this, they put, like, an actual, like, person where it's like, oh, he's, like, sick, and I get it. Like, he's hungry.
Yeah, I mean, and then Tom Hanks is just fantastic, as always. Basically, just completely transform. Like, he does, like, his voice and everything, like, he turns himself into, like, Captain Phillips, basically, so... So yeah, that was definitely, if you haven't seen that, check it out. I think it's going to be out in a on DVD and Blu-ray in a couple weeks probably. So, Chris, what's your number six?
My number six is The Wolverine. I've come to realize, like, I enjoyed it. You know, like, we made fun of this, the big flaws or the logic of this weird Japanese family that just basically caused his own downfall by inviting the Wolverine over. Mm-hmm. But, it, like, if this was a rated R and wasn't meant for, like, a family, like, young family, or, like, you know, like, young teens, like, this movie could have been so much more with the Frank Miller adaptation.
Well, apparently, where, I mean, Wolverine goes apparently that's the extended cut, Chris.
No, I didn't see extended, but, like, I still liked it enough.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but still, just the premise and just, like, the character, they didn't have, like, Lady Deathstrike, like, come out, or the fact that, like, the, was it the Red Hand? Usually he fights to Japan
hand,
now
yeah,
and
the
then.
Hand ninjas, yeah.
Yeah. There weren't a lot of those.
It was just, like, generic ninjas.
So, yeah, it's just generic ninjas, just rejects from, that other ninja movie that the Wachowski siblings made.
What?
I'm trying to think of that stupid ninja movie. No.
Ninja Assassin?
Ninja Assassin.
Yeah, that was, they produced that. They didn't direct it, though. It was like...
They were involved.
The guy directed V for Vendetta directed that movie.
From the people who brought you The Matrix.
And V for Vendetta.
Ninja Assassin.
Yeah.
And then as soon as like nobody liked it, they're like, no, they weren't involved. Yes, they were. They produced it. Didn't direct it.
But there's like two scenes of them, really, those ninjas, and I was like, all right, whatever. But just, like, Hugh Jackman's acting is just this, like, everything you loved about the Wolverine character and all the X-Men movies is
yep.
here.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, like, you gotta, I forgave it for its few flaws.
The end kind of went over, kind of ridiculous.
The end was
versus,
different,
like,
but I did like...
Giant robot Silver Samurai.
Which, again, was like, why? Oh, because robots are cool this year. Okay, that's why. Because
Transformers.
Yeah. Like, again, there could have been another story arc, which could have been the anime version, and, oh, God, if that ever happened. Jesus. Like, if they use just that.
It'd have to be played by a woman.
Yeah.
A hypersensitive Japanese woman.
So, I liked it. It was good enough because I was like, oh... Like, maybe I like the poster art. Maybe it was because I liked Hugh Jackman, like, screaming that he's the Wolverine half the time. So.
Both valid points, Chris.
Yeah. Plus, I like his updated haircut. You know, like, it looked better. Like, his hair, the Wolverine keeps getting better in each movie.
So, Joe, what's your number six?
My number six was This Is the End, and basically I feel like everything that I have to say about it has been said, so I'll just reiterate. Awesome movie, Danny McBride steals the show, definitely worth checking out because I think it might have been the funniest movie of the year.
Mm-hmm. So my number five is Man of Steel, the super polarizing, blockbuster of the summer, basically. Yeah, I mean, definitely, it was either love it or hate it. And I think we all fall more on the love side of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, I don't know. It's basically what I was expecting from a Superman movie. Which is just like, it was his origin again. And then crazy action-packed finale, which... That was, like, probably the most overblown thing of the year, was people, like, freaking out over the death toll slash killing at the end of that movie.
I was fine with that. I was totally fine with that.
Like, I don't... People were, like, going... Like, it was, like, writing entire articles about, like, the death toll of Superman.
Like, yeah, it's gonna be a huge, surprising number.
It's like, what do you expect when there's, like, two, basically, gods fighting each other in a major city?
Yeah, I was less offended by the death toll and destruction than I was by the other controversial thing about the ending of that movie. And even that didn't offend me all that much. Like, it was shocking, but, you know, I feel like if anything, this is the first Superman movie that kind of deals with, like, oh, yeah, if you have these two gods, basically, like you just said, fighting through a city, like Dragon Ball Z fighting, like, bad shit's going to happen, you know? So, yeah, I don't agree with those people either, man. I'm with you.
And I thought Henry Cavill is definitely like a solid Superman, but Michael Shannon just completely steals the show.
Steals the whole movie.
Yep.
And I'm definitely, if this is what the DC Cinematic Universe is going to be, then I'm definitely excited for it. Just hopefully they get their act together and get it all straightened out. But it's definitely a good first step into that connected DC universe. So, yeah, number five.
Right direction. Yeah. Right direction.
So what's your number five, Chris?
My number five one's Iron Man 3.
Okay.
How rude.
Yeah, well, if you thought the Wolverine had some, like, again, in most movies, the trequel is either the love it or hate it movie, and I liked it. You know, it wasn't any higher because of a few flaws that over time you start realizing. And I kind of realized it, like, after a second kind of thought about it and thinking about, like, the twist and how meaningless it didn't affect the movie. And the fact that Iron Man has, like, PTSD, PTSD, and then he just gets cured by more SD, like, just small things that add up. And, yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be this meaningful conclusion where, like, he blows up all his suits, spoiler, I guess, but,
yeah,
you know that's not gonna, matter.
He's gonna have the greatest suit ever for Avengers 2, like, the most advanced Iron Man suit ever.
Fucking better at this point.
He's probably have, like, the space suit that's been in the comics or something.
Yeah, that silver one that he didn't have.
I'd say it's probably an honorable mention for me, just because, like, as the summer went on, it kind of, like, got, as you thought about it more and more,
it lost its
luster as it went on.
Sure.
Yeah, so, like, it's a great, like, oh, a part of the series, you know? Like, I like to view these movies as a series. So, like, each movie has to kind of, like, match the prior.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, I see them all as, like, one complete story.
The Avengers saga.
Yeah, and, like, you put it as separate. Like, it might be the one of, I don't know, people say this is better than 2. But I like 2 because...
I think it's better than
2. Yeah, so, again, like, I like 2 because it's, like, he had a deal that's, like, he wanted to, like... still be Iron Man, you know? In this movie, he didn't want to be Iron Man anymore. So I was like, ah, you just fixed it. Like, now.
Yeah, why can we stop doing that with every superhero movie that comes out ever, please? It's like, I don't think I could be Spider-Man anymore. Hey, guess what? You're going to be Spider-Man still.
Yeah.
Because it's a fucking Spider-Man movie. I can't be Batman. You can. For sure you can. Like, it's not really fooling anybody anymore, I don't think.
So, Joe, what's your number five?
Number five for me was actually Anchorman 2.
Yep.
And I think it being in the five slot is appropriate. And the reason is it's kind of right in the middle for me. Like, it definitely wasn't, like, you know, top three best movies of the year for me. But... I think I was just so glad that this movie finally came out after all this time.
After the year-long hype train.
After the year-long hype train and after just, like, pining for a sequel since I, like, left the theater seeing the original movie, you know, it just had to be on the list for me. Definitely not as good as the first. And I will say that it probably wasn't even the best comedy of the year, if we're being totally honest. But, I mean, there was just so many great, like, quotable lines, and just the, like, minor spoiler alert, like, you had to know this was coming, but, like, there's another, like, news team
fight.
Battle. Yeah. Yeah. Like, just that alone, like, I think actually beats out This Is the End for cameos, but, yeah, just that alone, man, like, made the movie worth seeing, for sure. And it's still, and it's definitely not like, you know, Ron Burgundy's like Dark Knight. It's not like the piece de resistance of like Anchorman films or whatever. But it definitely kept the same spirit, and it felt like a pure sort of continuation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you just want to hang out with those characters for another 2 hours, then
bingo. Ooh, there yeah, you go. Exactly. It doesn't feel like, oh my god, what did they do to Anchorman? Like, it wasn't like
we're shifting the paradigm of Anchorman.
Right. And I mean, there's some silly stuff in it too, but I mean,
it was funny, but then it got kind of like worn out its welcome. Like when Ryan goes blind for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Yeah. Like, that was too, yeah, there are definitely times where it kind of, like, lost its way, and it was kind of like, let's do this now. But overall, like, it was a funny film.
Chicken of the Cave.
Yes. Chicken of the Cave, indeed. And now I'm just looking forward to enjoying a nice glass of Great Odin's Raven Scotch whiskey. With that movie when it's released on a home video.
So, getting down to it, guys, my number four is The Wolf of Wall Street, which I just recently saw. And that movie is just a cocaine and quaalude fueled, like, steam locomotive that just demolishes you for 3 hours. it's I would say probably one of the best comedies of the year, even though everything in it is like kind of awful, and you should be super pissed off at this guy for doing everything he's doing. It's based on Jordan Belfort, who was this super corrupt, super conniving, evil like stockbroker in like the late 80s, early 90s, who just basically created his own firm, and they just basically stole money from everybody. And then went off on, drug and hooker-fueled rampages and, like, parties and buying yachts and buying sports cars. He's doing all these horrible things, but it's also, like, he's kind of, like, super charismatic, so you're kind of like, yeah, I want to hang out with you, Jordan Belfort. Oh, wait, you're, like, one of the most horrible people in America. and Caprio, Leonardo DiCaprio, like, basically perfectly captures, like, the, like, charismatic slash horrible part of, like, that, because it's, like, you can see, like, how he was able to scheme everybody, but it's also, he's also, like, this absolutely irreprehensible person. So, and just the things that happen in this movie is, like, if you combine all three Hangover movies, it might be half as ridiculous as The Wolf of Wall Street. It's also kind of mind-blowing, too, because it's, like, this is, like, Martin Scorsese's follow-up to, like, the kind of boring, kind of, like, super family-friendly Hugo. And this is... As far a 180 as you could possibly turn, as movie-wise, because it's just, like, non-stop, like, swearing and drugs and sex and hookers and cocaine and quaaludes and craziness. So.
Nice.
It's 3 hours long, so I would say definitely set aside, like, an afternoon for it, but it is...
Bring snacks, maybe get a cocktail. Yeah,
it is definitely worth watching. It is pretty amazing. So, Chris, what's your number four?
My number four was Rush.
Yeah, I think you're the only one who saw Rush this year, Chris.
Yeah, like, all? In America? Like, maybe.
Wow. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, Rush is a very... Like, I kind of was asked by a friend to go watch it. It wasn't like, hey, like, you wander into, like, this movie. Like, I didn't know the history. I didn't know, like, what it was about, really. So... When I watched it, it was really informative, and it was not too, like, preachy about who you should like and what, like, you know, what the outcome meant. It's just kind of like, oh, like, this is a slice of life of these people during its time. And the fact that it's a biographical sports film drama, like, sports, like, I even used a quote because I was like, that's just a weird combination. I didn't think that I would ever use. And it was like, it's set really nice. It's shot really well because Ron Howard, you know, fucking shoots movies like very well to do that. So it's like his thing. And I again, like, this is the same guy who helped produce The Dilemma. So I was like confused. I was like, huh? So yeah, the story of like Ricky Lauda and Nikki and James Hunt, like it's the true story of like Talladega Nights, you know? It's weird. Like if you watch this, then go watch Talladega Nights. It's like a parody of it. Of this like weird rivalry between these two men who were actually friends in real life, but in the movie they seem like super dicks to each other. So, yeah, it's a good movie. Definitely a like, it's something we as like film critics would be like, if we were like super in our own butts, we'd be writing like article like pages of like, oh my god, like. It's such a masterpiece of our modern age. Well,
It feels like it was definitely trying to like a big like possible like Oscar pusher, but
yeah, like that.
Probably, I don't think it's. I think people forgot it came out this year, so I don't think it's gonna be too big a representative.
No, it's a very like weird gem of a movie, and I mean like if you really liked like. The sad German Nazi from Inglourious Basterds, he's back in this movie.
Yeah.
So what you? Because he plays Niki Lauda, uh-huh. So it's like, oh hey, I remember that guy. He was a Nazi, and now here's a race car driver.
So what you?
You never do forget a Nazi.
So what's your number four, Joe?
My number four was The Conjuring. I think that the Conjuring has really, for me, sort of sealed the notion of American horror being back in full swing. And, you know, if you know me and if you've listened to the podcast before, that's a pretty big compliment. So I think that, like Mama, but definitely to a much bigger degree, the pacing, the spine tinglingness, all that stuff, like the tension in this movie is just goddamn unbearable sometimes. And I think that, you know, just the first 10 minutes of this movie alone is probably the scariest, like, opening to a horror movie in the last, like, 25 years, I would say. You'd be hard pressed to find something that's, that sort of pulls you in more and sort of sets you up for what you're in for the rest of the, movie. So really well done there. Very, very, very much looking forward to the sequel and spinoffs or whatever, because, you know, the Warrens have a lot you could work with. So we got to see what they actually use going from there. But yeah, if you're into horror or if you're just into being scared and want a good, like, date movie or whatever, The Conjuring is a very coherent horror story. With some great pacing, some really, truly, like, you know, scary moments. And that's coming from a grown man.
It's so scary in our rating, just because it's scary.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's not some, like, olden Hollywood con where it's like, oh, you need to sign a waiver before you go see this
We're
movie.
Selling coffins, or,
like, they're gonna be selling, yeah, they're going to be selling coffins and life insurance in the lobby, like... They easily could have done something like that. They easily could have shown, like, the crowd reactions.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, they do for every Paranormal Activity movie. It's like, oh, let me guess, you're going to have Latinos in the dark that are, like, jumping. Like, ah, that was spooky. Well, guess what? That's any fucking movie you go to. You know? Like, that's not special. Show me somebody having a heart attack. Show me somebody having a seizure or, like, throwing up. But that doesn't happen. So with this, they're just like, hey, this movie's really fucking scary. But it's out, so go see it. Like, that was pretty much their marketing.
And it did phenomenal, too, at the box office.
This was a classic example of, like, a really good movie and word of mouth. And, of course, it's not just, like, you know, Johnny on the corner playing marbles. And it's like, oh, what are you doing? I'm going with the boys to see The Conjuring. It's the scariest movie in town. Like, obviously, Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff played a huge part. But it really was people being like, no, that was fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Or, like, no, that was really good, like, whatever. So, yeah, definitely hoping that this becomes, you know, its own sort of franchise and all that good stuff. But even more so, hoping that this trend only continues and that Hollywood is a little more lenient and willing to experiment with their horror.
Alrighty. So, my number three is Thor: The Dark World. Which is by far the best Marvel thing that happened this year.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it, man. I fucked up. I missed it.
Yeah, it's just like everything that was good about Thor, like the first Thor, with none of the problems of the first Thor. Just like it's completely blown up. It's like takes place completely in like Asgard and the other realms, which is great. It doesn't like arbitrarily depower, like make Thor like, oh no, Thor lost his powers again or something. It's like, no, like Thor is Thor the entire movie.
What is he gonna do?
Yeah, Thor is like totally Thor the entire movie, and pairs him back up with Loki for basically the whole movie, which is like the best sort of pairing in the Marvel universe of Thor and Loki. Mm. Loki is kind of the main bad guy still, but the bad guy introduced in this one, Malekith, is kind of lame, but it's balanced out by how great Loki is. So, and it's also like it's super hilarious. Like the first Thor was like a lot of that great like back and forth between everybody. Super great action. The final action sequence is just like super creative, super fun. It's basically like a huge version of Portal spread out across London, where everyone's like disappearing into different portals and ending up other places. And it's just like if you want like the if you want the first like great follow up to the Avengers, like Thor 2 is definitely it, not Iron Man 3, and definitely not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So Chris, what's your number 3?
My number 3 was Pacific Rim.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoy like giant robots punching things. As do we all. So like for me it's just actiony. Yeah, like there was Degrassi level of like melodrama where it's like, "Oh, I can drift with you and you have sad like Japanesey dreams that you should probably like see a therapist yeah. for instead of like signing into a giant robot that you can potentially destroy us all." Again, I mentioned like briefly that like the movie featured stupid technology, and this is the only way we can actually see it like actually happen. Like the fact that there was a robot with three arms that totally got his ass whooped in its only fight mm-hmm. sequence. The best robot was technically the Russian robot because it had the highest record of kills.
Yeah,
and it too like just failed
fucking
on our
Shadow
own.
Alpha.
Yeah. And the Australian team like has a robot like that is basically just like a souped up Subaru. And
Jingo.
Yeah. And then the positive nuclear energy, like just the positive uses of like a nuclear power robot. So I thought that was like great. So I feel like it's this generation's like Independence Day. It's like it's cheesy and it's corny, but like it works.
And it looks great, and there's amazing action in it. So,
right, and because like America built the perfect robot compared to like everyone else.
Yeah,
you know, like did we not acknowledge it? Even though it was like it wasn't the best, like it wasn't like the most advanced, it still won. Like in the end,
it had the best values.
It had the most uses, so. That was cool. Like Joe focused on like the side characters, and I focused more on just like the premise, and I think that's where I fell in love with it more.
Mm-hmm.
Like so, yeah, some of the characters are good. Some of the characters are like obviously just like filler characters, or they're there to like really have those key moments because you didn't exactly need Marco to like. Be a weird Asian, like
anime
sexy girl, and basically be like an anime character to fulfill that fanfare. But she was, and Ron Perlman as Hannibal Chan, like I kind of want to see his shit. Like I know the viral marketing was awesome with him, like trying to sell you like monster organs.
Hannibal Chan.
And I the thing is maybe because I saw that and the reveal in the movie was like. Supposed to be funnier, you know, but I saw the viral marketing way before, so it's like, oh, it's just Ron Perlman. Mm-hmm. He's gonna be in there somewhere.
And Charlie Day ended up.
Yeah,
and just
man.
Being Charlie, like a smart Charlie, but still being mm-hmm. Charlie.
Guys, I feel bad, by the way. I wasn't trying to shit on this movie at all. Like,
no,
it definitely
no, no,
made
no.
my, like, top 10. Like, I freaking loved it.
No, again, I point out most.
Well, I think it just depends on flaws. Like outside the action. Like depends on like how like. We'll with you in like a second, but because like, it's my number two. But
God damn it! Spoiler
alert. But like it depends on like if you find like the middle, like the dialogue and the sort of like the in between stuff. If you find it cheesy fun or cheesy bad. So right. I thought it was cheesy fun, like Independence Day or Top Gun or something. Yeah. So I was like pretty much on board for everything. Right. So like Idris Elba's speech and how Hurricane's son is basically Iceman and like all this other stuff. So
yeah, when they said today we're canceling the apocalypse, I was like, okay, well you have my attention.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great movie and. Well, obviously, I'm saying it's a great movie, but I'm saying, like, just, like, I accept it for all of its, like, bad behaviors. Like a really, like, unruly dog that you just, like its charm, you know? So.
Story of my life.
Like, I accept it. Like, I pointed out that it's not the best, but for this year, like, it was great and it was entertaining. Like, when I watched it in theaters, it was like, wow, I was actually, like, I walked away happy, not just, like, scratching my head going, like, why? Why didn't they just build, like, guns? Why didn't they just give these robots guns in the first Saw?
It was, right. I mean, it was by far the funnest blockbuster of the year for me. So, Joe, what's your number three?
My number three was The Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know that I'm usually not a big fan of remakes, except for some very, you know, special circumstances. But... good God. I mean, this was just fucking brilliant, you know? Like, I feel like every shot of this movie was like a love letter to the original series. And even the stuff that was new was still like a nod to the original, just like in the way they sort of stepped up the graphic violence and stuff. Like, yeah, there's no nail gun in the original, you know? But like, it's definitely everything that was done was in that same spirit. So that it kind of made you feel like it was part of the original, almost. Like, even the stuff like the scalding hot water and all that good stuff. I just feel like, you know, what it represented for horror remakes was really sort of inspiring, showing, like, hey, like, if you have a remake that's born out of love and not out of, like, well, I got nothing, I'm out of ideas, like, what should we do? It can really work very well. And I also really like the idea that it kind of blurs the lines between remake and sequel and same universe. Like, they were very coy about how they labeled it because they wouldn't call it a remake. And they wouldn't confirm or deny that it happens in the same universe as Army of Darkness and the original series and all that stuff. So, I think on its own it's great, but when you look at what it's a reincarnation of, it only makes the movie better, which usually isn't the case with remakes. So Evil Dead deserved a high spot on the list for me. Just to have a movie that was that fucking gory, too.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like I think it secured the Kick-Ass Award in a couple months for most bloodiest movie ever.
I think it had to.
Most, like, greatest, best, like, most practical blood used in a movie.
yeah, seriously. If you can watch that movie and then try to convince me that practical effects aren't better, you need to go fuck yourself. Like, that's pretty much what it comes down to.
So I already mentioned Pacific Rim is my number two. Pretty much, amazing action. I love the world that they build up of, like, basically the bone slums, which is, like, this entire section of a city. It's built around, like, kaiju bones, and everyone's, like, all the characters' names, and, like, the fucking base is called the Shatter Dome.
Ah, tremendous.
I just eat it up with a spoon.
Yeah.
That cheesy deliciousness. Probably the best movie this summer, and obviously super high on my list, so Pacific Rim is just great. Chris, what's your number two?
My number two was Anchorman 2.
Okay.
Nice.
You know, like, I recently watched the Wake Up Ron Burgundy, like, DVD a while ago. Like,
Ripped the lid off it.
Right before. So, like, I was still, like, on that Ron Burgundy train, just, like, anything I could see with him in it. And, like, I liked it. Like, it was one of the comedies that, like, made me actually laugh, like, a lot, like, during the movie. Especially when they were setting up jokes and just, like, maybe because my brain was, like, skipping ahead knowing, like, the punchline. And then knowing that it's, like, not even close to what the punchline, it,
do,
you know, like, what
I
the
do,
whole
I do
joke
super
was.
I do appreciate that, like, a lot of the jokes in the trailer are different in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's
yeah.
alternate takes.
Well, that's because they had so many takes.
Yeah.
And just, like, some of the, like, just small banter that they do. Especially when they're talking about, like, black people. And he's just like, black. Like, that just killed me. Because it was just, it was so funny. Even though it was
awkward.
It was really awkward. It was just, like, that, like, simple comedy writing that didn't try to go for, like, smart comedy. It just went for obvious comedy. And it just beat it with a hammer. It was kind of like that, like, Austin Powers mole joke.
Mm-hmm. Which can be hilarious when it's done right, and I agree with you that it was done right.
It's a classic rake joke, where just, like, stepping on rakes, and it's funny, dumb, and the funniest thing ever. So,
And I didn't mind the blind arc of the blind Ron Burgundy.
I mean, it was just so ridiculous. Like, I mean, I don't mind it either in the end, but it was just kind of like, oh, man, come on. Like, really? Like, how crazy is this movie going to get?
Yeah. And, yeah, the fight at the end was, like, high-budgeted compared to, like, the first one where,
there's, like, there's, you know, ghosts and future tech and
other things happening. And just, like, that alone was like, okay, like, I get it. It's a sequel. It's got more money. It's got more expectations. So the fight's going to be a little more ridiculous. But yeah, I think the first fight's more classic because it's simple, you know, and the cameos.
It was completely out of nowhere, and it kind of, like, it got right up to the line of being too ridiculous, but then it didn't step over it, and this one kind of did step over it. Where it's just like, oh, instead of, like, Brick has a gun for the future. Okay, I guess. Like, Liam Neeson has Stonewall Jackson and Minotaur with him. Okay.
But I did the first one, he's just got a grenade. Like, Brick's thing, I have a grenade, was fun.
Oh, quick side note. Have you guys heard the theory that Brick is a time traveler?
No.
I feel like I read that.
There's, like, a fan theory going on that Brick is a time traveler, and that's why he's, like, because he's time travels, his brain's messed up, so that's why he's so stupid.
That's very specific. I think he just might be a stupid
character.
But it's
also, that's where, like, he gets his grenade and, like, the future gun from, is because he goes in the future, gets the gun, and comes back to that moment. And also, like, there's a couple lines, like, in the first one where he's, like, he mentions, like, in the future, doctor will tell me I'm mentally retarded. And this one, he has, like, the thing about, like, hey, remember 10 years from now, we're all flying around jetpacks?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I guess. It's kind of there.
It just adds, like, another ridiculous level layer to that.
Yeah,
definitely, it was one of the funniest movies of the year, but, just not quite on my list, but, like I said before, if we're doing top five comedies, I would say it's probably, like, number three for me.
Yeah.
So, Joe, what's your number three? Or two.
Well, my number three was Evil Dead. My number two was actually The Place Beyond the Pines.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that, I was actually kind of surprised that this movie was as high on my list as it was, but at the end of the day, I'm really not surprised that it's this high. And the reason I say that is because we've talked about it before, but there's no way to not feel strongly about this movie. So whether you love it and think it's, like, one of the best movies ever, or whether you absolutely hate it and just think it was, like, you know, sadistically depressing and was, like, a snapshot of, like, you know, just American, like, lives falling apart, there's no way to leave the theater being like, eh, what do you want to do now, you know? It was just really, really moving, and I would say that just about everybody in it, career performances. Like, and I think everyone but Ray Liotta probably fell into that. And that's just because Ray Liotta has had so many, like, incredible roles. It's kind of hard to look at him in this movie and be like, oh, yeah, that's the best he's ever been. No, I don't think so. But, you know, as far as Bradley Cooper, like, if you see this movie, like, he's not going to be the guy from The Hangover anymore. And I think the same goes for Ryan Gosling as well. Just a really great movie, and it's kind of hard to articulate, like, what's so great about it. So I really suggest that if you haven't seen it, you know, give it a chance, especially now that it's out, you know, on Blu-ray and on demand and all that stuff. Like, you know, check it out. And you know what? You don't have to watch the whole thing if you don't like it. You know, just give it a chance, because it's one of those sort of rare movies for me that it's, like, it's really hard to articulate why it moved you or, like, why you like it so much, but it definitely did, so it's number two on my list.
I guess right down to it, guys. My number one is Gravity.
Whoa.
Which I think both of you guys unfortunately did not get the chance to see that.
I did not.
It was just fucking mind-blowing. I mean, even just on, like, a visual level, it was just, like, you're sitting there just like, how the hell did they make this movie?
Yeah.
Like, some of the best CG you've ever seen, some of the best 3D you've ever seen, the best space sequences you've ever seen. It's, like, Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are both great in it. It has some of the most intense and crazy action sequences of the year. It's one of those movies where, like, you're watching an action sequence and you have to, like, kind of, like, remind yourself to breathe because you're just like, oh my god, what is happening?
Wow.
And I hope it still plays when it comes out on DVD Blu-ray. But yeah, just seeing it in the theater in 3D was just, like, insanity. I was just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm worried about now, because I want to see it so much, because, I mean, and no offense to, you know, you for making this number one or anyone who liked it, but, like, I don't know. I feel like maybe it was the way it was marketed, or maybe it was just, like, seeing that it was starring George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. I was like, I don't really want to see a space romance.
It's, you know? It's not at all. It is, like...
Exactly. That's what I heard. It's like the total
it's survival.
Opposite.
It's, like, it's Castaway. Right. It's, like, 127 hours. It's, like... But, like... A million times worse than that, because you're like, you're in fucking space.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I could imagine. So, that's definitely one of my worries, though, is that it's like, wow, I really want to see this movie. But I'm like, fuck, did I miss out on seeing it in, like, IMAX or, like, real D, 3D, you know?
Yeah, I can't even imagine it in IMAX. I saw it just in regular. But, it's like, if you have seen any, like, IMAX movies about, like, the Hubble telescope or something and, like, those sort of visuals... Like, yeah. It's that, but then everything blows up in, like, ridiculous action sequences. Shit. So, it was amazing. So, definitely my number one movie of the year. So, Chris, what's your number one movie of the year?
Mine was The World's End. I know it's not, like, supposed to be, like, a number one on most lists, but...
Shut up, Chris.
This is everything action, bitch.
I know, for us it makes sense, especially for me. Well,
it should be a shirt. This is everything action, bitch.
Like, I enjoy just the premise. I'm a huge fan of, like, everyone involved. I, like, appreciate the weird, like, not dooming ending, but the whole, like, the world's different now.
Like, 180 of what happens, yeah.
Yeah, the 180 of, like, what most, like, of the, like, Cornella, like, trilogy, like, Cornella, like, movies have, where it's, like, all wraps up neatly. This one's kind of like, nope, this kind of goes on. This is how the world is now. And I appreciate, like, the humor, like, the really weird, like, morals that, like, the characters have.
And great, especially, just, like, kind of, like, super clever, like, punny British conversations they have and stuff. Like, one of the best parts is, like, them trying to come up with a name for the robots and stuff, and...
Yes. Or, like, arguing with, like, the hive mind.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool. For me, like, it was something different compared to, like, a comic book movie or, like, a remake or even, like, a sequel. You know, like, it was just different to the point where, to me, like, the premise was simple, but then here comes all this chaos. Because I remember the original trailer didn't show the alien part. And then it slowly showed you, like, the alien part. Yeah. And then it became, like, a half-scene. I kind of appreciate it if they didn't show you the alien part at all.
I think we talked about it when we first saw it, Chris, but, like, if it was just them on, like, this pub crawl, and then, like, super awkward, super ridiculous things happen to them, without any robots, without any aliens, it would still be super hilarious and great.
Yes, it'd still be, like, but, like, and, like, me and you both watch a lot of BBC, like, comedies these days. And so we were so used to it, and it delivered that like funny quippy humor where they make fun of like structure of situations,
like,
the like meeting of situations.
Because like the robots don't show up until at least like half hour into the movie, if not longer.
Right.
Like
yeah.
Up to that point, it's still like this great, just like awkward British comedy.
It's like this awkward British comedy, but it's also like a coming of age tale for like a middle aged person. So that's why I was like, oh, that's like a really deep, profound like part, which you can focus on that if you like, but you don't have to. You can ignore it for more like drinking
it's
chaos
a great role, Simon Pegg is the crazy one this time, not Nick Frost, which is pretty great too.
Yeah, that was different too. Yeah, and I mean, in a way, this is technically a trequel, but in spirit, you know. So it's not supposed to be like you're gonna see some
sort of tone,
stuff. Yeah, it's got some like repeating jokes from prior movies, but it's still pretty funny. So that's mine. Joe, how about your number one?
My number one is kind of predictable, but my number one was Man of Steel, and I want to say that I realize that it's cliche, and I realize that it's probably predictable. But to me, I think that even though there are probably better movies than Man of Steel that came out this year, I don't think any other movie had the sort of pressure on it to succeed and to be liked like Man of Steel had. And, I mean, obviously, we've spoken about it, you know, ad nauseum before on the podcast, but basically the entire, like, you know, DC universe on film was riding on the success of this movie. And that's a lot of goddamn pressure to put on a director and their vision and all that stuff. But even to put on an actor's performance as Superman, I mean, he's basically going to be like the anchor point for every other hero after that for this version of, you know, DC on film. So, yeah, I mean, it had its faults. And it certainly wasn't perfect. You know, I do think that it was definitely a Superman for a new generation, as lame as that may sound. But I think that it's true. And I think that was the whole goal of the New 52 to begin with, was to sort of, like, give you something that was familiar and classic, but also modern and refined. And I think that that's what Man of Steel was. One of the biggest gripes for me was that just god-awful first, like, 15 minutes of the movie, which was basically, like, you know, Panzer Dragon or whatever, like, with Avatar with Russell Crowe, which I understand that with what Russell Crowe probably cost to get in that movie, you had to get your fill and all that stuff, which is fine. But, like I said, it has its faults. But ultimately, I feel like you couldn't really ask for a better jumping off point for what's to come from there. So, yeah, number one, Man of Steel.
Alrighty. So I'm just going to Brian's not on with us tonight, but he has his top 10 list all set to go. So I'm just going to run down that quick for the listeners and everybody. So Brian's number 10 is World War Z, which...
nice and low, where it belongs. Yeah,
I mean, I would definitely not put it on my top 10, but it was definitely a fun surprise of, like, it was not a complete disaster. And
definitely not a complete disaster.
And a fun, like it, Tony asked me the zombies before, which is just, like, crazy, just swarms of zombies.
Yeah, if you ask me, it still needed to be an R.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that it didn't go for R.
There's an unrated cut, I think, of it, right?
I don't think if there is, I didn't see it.
Hopefully the sequel kind of, like, fixes everything, makes it R, and kind of makes it more of, like, the actual war of World War Z.
I actually heard somewhere that Brad Pitt, that his contract or whatever was designed so that he got, like, a percentage of the gate or whatever, or of the box office. So the rumor is that that's why there was the reshoots and the push to make it, like, more of a PG-13, yeah. Like, well, adventure movie.
The original ending was batshit insane.
No, I know, but I mean, like, in general, like, why it wasn't, like, Walking Dead level, like, gore.
Yeah.
You know, because if they're getting away with that shit on AMC, you would think that their zombie apocalypse movie would have been a little bit more visually, like, mature, but it's all good.
So number 9 was This Is the End. Number 8, Pacific Rim. Number 7, Anchorman 2. Number 6, Thor the Dark World. Number 5, Star Trek in Darkness. Number 4, Place Beyond the Pines.
Nice.
3, The World's End. 2, American Hustle. And number 1, Ryan Reed with me, Gravity.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so those are best of the list. Now, let's flip it over, go on the flip side. Worst movies of the year, because as good as some of the movies of 2013 were, there were some abominations that came out. So I mean, I have a top five. I don't know if you guys have top five like worst movies, but
frankly, I'm offended by some of the movies that came out this year. Uh-huh. So,
yeah, not like probably if I did a top 10 worst, these would be in there. But just a couple ones before I get into my top five. The Lone Ranger, which I finally just saw like a week ago.
Ooh.
Was mind-numbingly long, and I don't know what the point of it was. I don't know why it was so long. I don't know what Johnny Depp is doing in it, other than being like crazy Johnny Depp. The only redeeming thing about it is like the end action sequence is kind of cool, where it's like kind of like these dueling trains that are like going up like above each other and beside each other and all that stuff. But definitely was not like worth 2.5 hours to get to that point. So. I can see why that bombed horribly at the box office. Also, Snitch, very disappointing action movie from The Rock. It was kind of just a boring, like, not, like, The Rock was, like, super depressed in it the entire time. It wasn't, like, fun. Like, yes, yeah, The Rock, he's having fun, man. It's just like, The Rock's just like, I need to get my son back. And it wasn't really an action movie. It was kind of just more like this crime drama. And that's kind of not what I want from The Rock. I kind of want him like just punching through the walls and stuff. So not what I was expecting, and it's a little bit disappointing. Also, Dead Man Down, which I don't know if any of you guys saw that one, but it looked kind of cool from the trailers, but then you watched it and it was kind of just like meh.
I got a feeling like the trailer does sell you on like the watching it. It really does. Like it's when you watch it, it's gonna be this like. Revenge tale, and like, you know, Colin Farrell's like, I'm just gonna do this like redemption kind of job. Yeah. And the like, hair like gets
the action movie has like weird like twists that make it like kind of dumb, and it's the whole middle is just kind of like this weird like relationship drama. And I don't know, it was just completely meh for me. My five worst movies, though, number 5 is Parker. Super disappointing Jason Statham movie. I didn't know if it wanted to be like a comedy or a heist movie or an action movie. Didn't really do any of them well. The whole middle is just kind of like this boring slog of like wacky Jennifer Lopez comedy. So, yeah, I mean. Definitely the worst Jason Statham movie to come out in a while, and definitely this year, because there's two other Jason Statham movies were pretty solid that came out this year. Number 4, White House Down. just a completely bloated mess that is, like, basically everything that Olympus Fallen is not. It was, like, PG-13, so it was lame. It was super long. Just horrible cliche characters. Like, some of the worst Roland Emmerich characters who are, to start off with, terrible. And then they were kind of, like, amplified in this movie. Like, Channing Tatum's daughter is just the most annoying daughter in his, in, like, one of the most annoying daughters in movie history. She's just, like, super... I don't know, she's like, she has a fucking blog about politics on YouTube or something. It's like, oh, fuck you, Roland Emmerich. And then she, like, runs, like, the whole, they completely rip off, like, the, it's actually, White House Down is not really Die Hard, it's more like The Rock. But, like, a terrible version of The Rock. So yeah, so number three, After Earth, just, I don't know what anyone was thinking when they made that movie. Or it's like, it was a birthday present to Jaden Smith, I guess. I don't know. it's just everything about it is just terrible. Like, I don't know why they had, like, Will Smith, who is, like, super, like, just super charismatic and super great. They just, like, let's make him the most dour, grim person ever, and then, like, make him, like, locked into the spaceship for the entire movie. That'll be great, right? And then the movie focuses on his son, and they both have, like, ridiculous accents. And then it's, like, it's thousands of years in the future, but there's still just, like, deer and birds and everything flying around Earth. So nothing's evolved, even though it's 1,000 years in the future. Whatever.
I do like how there's been no attempts to, like, fix Earth. They're just like, we just left it there. Why'd you leave it? It was bad.
Yeah, I don't even remember the reason they left Earth. I think it was, like, pollution or something, but it seems fine now. Well, actually, they do have to, like, take those
fear monsters.
Well, yeah, there's fear monsters, but also, like, that the weird, like, inhaler they have to take, like, every hour. Like, the golden inhaler.
I mean, I get, like, the environment's adapted and, like, changed since humans haven't been on in a while, like, but the humans...
Birds are bigger, and there's monkeys in Seattle. Like, I don't know.
And no, like, for, like, Earth, apparently the vegetation just totally wiped out most of, like, cities and stuff, you know? Like, everything became a giant jungle.
Yeah, there's no, like...
Ruins.
Yeah, like, if you watch, like, Oblivion, like, at least Oblivion had, like, awesome sort of, like, decaying structures in it and stuff. Like, after Earth was just, like, we were in the Redwood Forest or whatever.
But you'd still see, like, something, like a tower.
Yeah.
Or, like, possibly car parks.
It's more prehistoric than, like, apocalyptic.
Yeah, like, they told me they time traveled. This kind of makes sense.
Definitely, yes. Number two, Pain and Gain. Oh, my God. Just, like, all of Michael Bay's worst tendencies with none of his good things. Like, terrible offensive characters, horrible attempts at humor, but there's no, like, action sequences to balance it out in any way. It's just, like, if Transformers all just, like, Shia LaBeouf and like, everyone, like, all the horrible humor sections from Transformers, if that was a 2-hour movie, it'd be Pain and Gain. Like, not even, like, Mark Wahlberg and The Rock can save that movie.
Yeah, this is where The Rock fails at, like, fixing things.
Yeah. And number one, just, I don't know how this movie was as bad as it was, considering, like, everyone in it and everyone involved in it, but The Counselor. It was Ridley Scott directing it, Cormac McCarthy writing it. You got, like, Michael Fassbender, Brad Pitt, Cameron Diaz, Penelope Cruz, Javier Bardem. There's, like, all these... like, great actors, great writers, great director, and it is just the most pretentious, slow piece of shit I saw this year. The trailers can't even sell, like, what it is. Like, they're trying to sell it as, like, the thriller, but there's, like, nothing they can use to put in the trailer to, like, sell it as, like, a thriller. Because it's just, like, most of the movie's just people having, like, these, like, super pretentious insane conversations with each other about, like, morality and drugs and the meaning of life and everything. It's just like, it's just like, I want to punch everyone in the face. So yeah, so those are my five worst movies I saw this year. Chris, did you see anything particularly terrible this year?
I did see The Haunting in Connecticut 2.
Okay, yeah, that seems pretty awful.
Ghost of Georgia.
Ghost of Georgia, which
not Connecticut.
Not Connecticut. No reason why this is part of a franchise. Maybe because the story is like super racist halfway through. Like once they reveal like the plot, because it's about like slavery and the Underground Railroad.
Ghosts?
Half of them are
okay.
And not to spoil too much, but like they realize the reason why these ghosts are here is because like they need the people like this white family to find their remains like on their house property. But instead of, like, kind of being polite and just pointing the right signs to, like, hey, if you help me, like, I won't haunt you anymore. Or, like, if you, just show me, like, if you just open this door, like, you'll find some bones. You know, like, it's very simple. But the ghosts do it in such these, like, stupid ways that it makes the ghosts seem like, certain ghosts seem like villains when they aren't. You know, it's, like, a really bad twist when it's, like, there are, like, peaceful ghosts. Like, there is this ghost that is pretty calm and just, like, shows up but doesn't do anything evil or good. He just shows up, and he doesn't freak people out. Like, you know, that was, like, okay, that kind of makes sense, where, like, he didn't want to get involved. But then there's a bunch of ghosts that, like, are just complete dicks, and they turn out to be, like, good guys, you know? You're like, why did they do this? Like, why are they, like, suddenly, like, just, like, pop up and scream, you know? Like, you don't need to do that if you want the health. It's one of those movies where everyone keeps making terrible decisions and no one's listening to that person with the obvious, like, plan that would work. Mm-hmm. And in the end, they just use the obvious plan that works anyway. In terms of, like, classic horror, this is not. This is definitely written by someone who watched a whole bunch of, like, crappy late 2000s scary movies that involve, like just, like, parents that don't look young enough to have a kid that old. Cliche stereotypes of like siblings, you know, whenever like a family has like a sibling character, like a older sibling, like a brother-in-law or a sister-in-law show up, and they're like, their life's a hot mess, and thinking about like teaming up with like the somewhat stable family would help their lives, you know, like that cliche in horror movies. This is even worse because the sister-in-law character is a tramp who lives in like a waltz, like, from Breaking Bad's, like, meth trailer. And, like, it's just, like, this unnecessary cliche about this, like, trashy, trampy sister who, like, doesn't, like, hates her family, hates, like, her gift of seeing ghosts, which, like, the family curses that. Like, just, like, if you're a girl, you're most likely, you have this gift of seeing ghosts. Which I guess was the thing in the first movie. I think, was, like, the family, they were, like, psychic enough to, like, see, like, visions of ghosts.
Who knows? I don't
know. So, like, that's, like, it's like, the vague connection to the first movie. But it's, like, that's just that's just, like, a plot device that any ghost movie could have, so you don't need to even have, like, the Haunting Connecticut connection. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, drinking heavily, like, during half of the movie once they got to the Underground Railroad part, because the first... Chris, before to that point, you just see these, like, black ghosts, and there's no explanation until, like, oh, there used to be, like, an Underground Railroad around here. I was like, oh, I thought they just, like, getting horrified by this, like, bayou ghost. So, I don't know. The plot doesn't kick in, but it's good, because once the plot picks up, it makes sense. But then once you, like, look at it, you're like, this is the worst ghost plan. Like, their actions don't make sense.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it was either... great horror movies or the worst horror movies ever made this year.
Yeah, no in the middle.
Yeah. It was upsetting because I was like, this could have been a lot better from what I thought, and it failed. I didn't have much hope, and I was more disappointed.
Yeah. Well, the first one sucked too. But
okay, that'd be fair.
Yeah. What else did you hate?
R.I.P.D. I hated it because of the potential it could have been.
It's
I hated it.
It's it feels like so like forgettable that it's like you can't really hate it because like no one's gonna care in like a month.
Right, right. Like, I only hated it because I had this other alternate version in my head later on that I was like, this would have made sense. And then the freaking just the some of the visual effects were so like poorly rushed.
Yep.
And
I saw some of the trailers like Left 4 Dead quality.
Oh my god! Yeah, and Left 4 Dead, man, the settings look amazing. Yeah. But in this movie, where like it starts to like try to morph like the ghosts, I don't know what to call they call it when it's like you're too much of a ghost, like or too much of a dead person.
Yeah. It just
and it just looks like terrible.
Yeah, it's so mediocre that it doesn't inspire any sort of emotion. It's just like flatline.
Again, the funnier parts are when they go to James Hong, and he says the lines that Ryan Reynolds are saying, and he just has that banana in his hand. That's funny. Yeah. But they don't use enough of that, where, you know, you see, it's like one side of the movie's like this trying to be action-y Men in Black, and the other side of the movie's like a senile old Asian guy running around. Mm-hmm. And they pick the wrong moments for a lot of them to show you which ones. Yeah. What else? I think for a good factor, we always make fun of Safe Haven.
Yeah, no, that was Brian's most hated movie of the year, he said.
Right. All right, so we just always throw that in. Cause...
like, the dumbest, stupidest twist possibly ever.
Yeah. What's your thought? What are you guys' thoughts on Carrie?
I haven't seen it yet.
Joe?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay. I've seen parts, not enough to warrant, like, a full review, but I've seen parts where I'm just like, oh, I kind of remember this. John Travolta did a better role in this. Like, it's got certain, like, modern takes on the whole, you know, bullying a girl and a psychotic mother now. Like, they just upped the violence on her. It wasn't terrible, but it was, I just remember it was so mediocre, too, where, like, they just, like, as soon as it came out, they just, oh yeah, that movie didn't happen. You know,
there's like, a lot of people saying, like, it seems like Chloe Grace Moretz would be the girl who was, like, making fun of Carrie in the first movie instead of being Carrie herself.
Yeah, she's not, like, a freaky girl in this one. Like, she's actually, like, a mean girl lookalike, yeah. You know?
Which is, she's like, well, the entire middle of Kick-Ass 2.
So, that, I guess it's a bad movie, because, again, like, it landed in not a good category, and it landed in a terrible category.
Mm-hmm.
I did see movie 42, and I do agree, like, 43.
We saw the prequel, Chris.
Nice, yeah. Well, it's kind of weird, because I was like, oh, you know, this is, like, a bunch of, like, Family Guy skits. I wonder why. And then, like, then at the end, when you actually do see, like, Seth MacFarlane, I was like, that's why.
it's like when he had, like, his YouTube channel. Or just, like, random YouTube clips.
Hmm. So, like, I get it. Like, I understood the idea. It still felt like these actors were forced by a contract, but they still had, like, I think some of them had fun making it, and some of them you could see, like, they were kind of like, ah, shit, I'm too old for this. Like, I really hope my career can stay alive. Yeah. Like, certain skits were funny, like, especially the bet, where they keep one-upping dares. Did you ever see movie 42,
nope.
Zach? 43? No? I know Joe has. And what was your favorite skit, Joe?
I liked it. Probably the one with the homeschooled kid.
Ah. Yeah, like those are like charming, and the fact that the actors kind of like went all out for that those parts, like the homeschool, the leprechaun, and I believe the bet were like the best. And then just like I saw this movie on Netflix, so that they only gave me one extra like skit, which was like Beagle's the cat, and that was like insulting how stupid that was. Where like there's like a cartoon cat that they like interact with, they try to make it like a really failed TV pilot.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah. So. I don't know what else.
Did you see anything particularly awful, Joe?
Oh, boy, did I. So I'll go through this really quick. And I guess, best of the worst to worst of the worst. So Scary Movie 5, because what the fuck? Dark Skies, which was an awesome idea, and I thought I was going to really like it, but then it turned out to be a terrible movie. So, so much for mixing the paranormal and the extraterrestrial in a way that gets people to give a shit about it, because it was pretty much just a family drama disguised as a quasi-horror
from the producers of Insidious.
Yeah, yeah, definitely not something you need to see. Number three was Pain and Gain,
yes.
Which is surprising because you would think that with The Rock in it and with weights being lifted that I would really like it, but ultimately it was just a terrible movie.
The actual, like the actual like thing it's based on is super interesting and super crazy.
Yeah, and they managed to make it not like, super interesting.
Can you imagine if Dave, like if they, someone like David Russell did this movie?
Yeah, no, it would have been infinitely better, but like it wasn't an action movie, and it definitely wasn't a drama.
It was,
and it was just kind of there.
Like
it was just kind of there.
It's a crime comedy. So,
it was very bizarre, but ultimately not good. Number two worst was The Purge, and the reason was because, well, A, I hated it, but B, because, I mean, the blueprint was there. Like, video games like Manhunt and, you know, other movies where it's like, society's collapsing all around us, like, it's not a new thing. Like, they did Twilight Zone episodes about that. Like, everything you need to be good is right there, and then they dropped the ball hard. Like, it just was terrible. It wasn't a good action movie. It wasn't a good horror movie. Ultimately, I hated everyone in it. Like, I didn't care about his family. I wanted his family to die. That little fucking kid with that stupid-ass, like, Toy Story Sid action figure thing that he has on wheels. Like, fuck you, little boy. Yeah. Like, nobody cares. Okay? Yeah, god damn. It was just so, like, halfway through it, I was just moaning, like, oh, like, why am I doing this to myself? Probably because I just have to know how it ends, and I'm not a better person for it. And the only reason that The Purge was number two is because I saw The Lords of Salem. Now, The Lords of Salem is my number one worst movie of 2013. And I'm saying this as a huge Rob Zombie fan and a Rob Zombie's Halloween apologist, okay? I actually quite enjoyed those movies. Not the second one as much. But from what I understand, he didn't want to make it anyway. So Lords of Salem is an awesome music video, I'm sure. Like, if you just put it on mute and then listen to, like, you know, the Rob Zombie, like, past, present, and future collection, I'm sure it's really fucking cool. But when it's not on mute and when you're watching it as a movie, it is just fucking horrifically bad. Like, it's way too bizarre and abstract for its own good, which I know is kind of a douchey thing to say about a movie, but it's pretty much just a collection of, like, pictures of things happening and not really, like, a cohesive story with characters that you care about. It's just, like, half-assed characters that you could care less what happens to them, and then, I guess, like, witches or whatever, and there's just, like, way too many tits over 70 years old in this movie. it's just terrible. And like the imagery is like juvenile at best, where it's like, oh look, it's a metaphor. She's like their Virgin Mary. Oh, is she? That's so profound. Like, wow. I don't know. It was just so up its own ass and like pointless that it was really upsetting, especially because I really wanted it to be good. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome because it's Rob Zombie totally unhinged and, like, off the rails. And now it's not really surprising to me that his next movie is about a fucking, like, you know, Stanley Cup championship. You know, he's making a hockey movie. And I'm like, okay, well, someone obviously got their hands on this. And I was like, hey, do you want to make movies again? Yeah, so then don't ever fucking try this shit. So yeah, those are my top five worst movies, and I don't recommend that you see any of them.
So, yeah, so that was 2013. I think we can put the cap on that until we get to our Kick-Ass Awards and around Oscar time. But for right now, I mean, I think it was a pretty solid year for movies.
Yeah, it's that weird blank period because the problem was 2013 was they started announcing for 2015.
Yeah.
And about, like, movies, so it's like, oh, so a lot of things came out here are fillers then, or like, or they're like, oh, before this movie came out the door, we're franchising it, so don't worry about this, like, prepare for the next one.
So, speaking of stuff that's coming up, why don't we do a quick rundown of our preview of 2014, just some things we're excited for, what's coming up. Is there anything, like, right off the top of your guys' heads that you're super excited for 2014?
Godzilla.
Yeah, I mean, that'd probably be number one, I would say, is Godzilla.
Guardians?
Yeah, I would say Godzilla, Captain America, and Guardians are, like, my top three that I'm looking forward to.
And it's still, like, the year of the, like, geek. You know, like, all these movies coming out that are basically being, like, funneling money are, like, geek movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is great for us. Don't get me wrong.
It's not a DC movie this year, which is kind of crazy, but they're saving it.
It doesn't need to
be. They're saving it for, hopefully, the mind-blowing Batman vs. Superman.
All they have to do is announce that The Rock is going to be Lex Luthor, and they don't need a movie in 2014. Yeah. It's pretty much that simple.
If The Rock was in, like, the power armor, oh my god.
Yeah.
And this punches Superman, like, through the earth. I don't know. That'd be amazing.
Agreed.
Just some other stuff that I'm looking at. Actually, in, like, a month, the Lego movie, which I'm super excited for, I don't know if you guys are, but that looks super fun and super great.
I agree, yeah. I'll see the shit out of that.
And some of the guys made 21 Jump Street. They're making 22 Jump Street. They made Clay with a Chance of Meatballs. So a little sense of humor. They do, like it's really nerdy, like super super quick, super fast humor. That's really great. New RoboCop's coming up in a month or two. I don't know.
Not really anticipating.
Yeah.
Staying on the fence for that.
And now, especially because they have, like, the promotion, like, don't drink and drive or whatever, tied in with RoboCop. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, there's a ton of, like, historical action epics coming out next year, too. We got 300, Rise of the Empire. We got two Hercules movies. And we have Pompeii. Which I think right now 300 is one I'm looking forward to the most. If we get a trailer for the Rock Hercules movie and it looks awesome, then obviously that's probably gonna jump to number one. We've got I don't know, Noah. Are you excited for that one, Chris?
Nope. Okay. We made fun of it because we're like, this
because
is...
it's like it's Gladiator.
Yeah, it's Gladiator on a boat.
Oh, Muppets Most Wanted. I'm super excited for that one. The first one was great.
Yep.
I'm just going down like 2014 in film and on Wikipedia. Nonstop, the latest from Liam Neeson, kicking ass. I think we're always on board with that. Actually, I think they might have just announced a date like last week, but The Raid 2 is coming out in March.
I'm excited.
Oh my god! Yeah, like apparently there's like everything that was crazy about the first one is just ramped up to like 10 in the sequel. Sabotage, latest from Arnold. Arnold leading a team of like DEA badasses. I think we're pretty much obligated to see that movie.
Yep. The only thing about it is that the trailer kind of has some obvious things where, like, hey, one of you is the mole. Yeah. Like, so that's my only...
It's like, so there's a mole, and then it's cut to, like, someone looking super shady, and it's like, oh, obviously that person's the mole.
Or is he? But most likely he is.
Actually, the trailer came out while we were on, like, kind of a Christmas break, but did you see the trailer for Transcendence, Chris?
No.
It's Johnny Depp and, like, Paul Bettany and a bunch of other people. Johnny Depp, basically, like, he's, like, this developer of AI, and he gets attacked by, like, these anti-technology terrorists, and then they have to, like, upload his consciousness into, like, his computer system, and he basically becomes, like, the most powerful AI in the world, and, like, basically taking over the internet.
Oh, wait, yes.
Morgan Freeman's
yes,
in it, a bunch
this.
Of other people are in it. It's kind of like yes, Skynet becomes Skynet, basically.
Yeah, it's just a one-man yeah. Skynet, where he got too much control, and obviously he just went broke for
yeah.
power. There's no one that no one ever like becomes powerful and like just be like content. They're just like, well, and now we're evil.
That was kind of interesting. Amazing Spider-Man 2 is kicking off the summer. I think we're cautiously optimistic about that one.
Because
it seems like it's gonna be like just completely overloaded and too bloated with like villains and subplots and everything, but hopefully everything kind of like works together and it's awesome. X-Men Days of Future Past, another huge one for next summer. All of, like basically everyone who's ever been in an X-Men movie together in one movie. There's a new A Million Ways to Die in the West, which is the newest from Stephanie Parolin, like newest movie following up Ted.
Hmm.
He's doing like a Western comedy, a la like Blazing Saddles.
That's cool. I mean, we all had doubts of people doubted Ted on the paper where it's like it's about a guy and a teddy bear. And Stephanie Parolin can tell a story because it's just not. It's just as long as it has that like. Non-Family Guy or American Dad or Cleveland Show like plot.
Yeah, they don't have to cut away constantly like ridiculous jokes. Yeah. Like it's and just like keep things kind of straightforward, but like still batshit insane. Edge of Tomorrow. I don't know. Are you looking for that one, Chris? The Tom Cruise future
Groundhog's
Day.
Yeah,
future Groundhog's Day. Yeah.
Kinda, cause it looks nice, and I kinda wanna know what he does differently in each take, but I won't like, I just like the premise,
yeah.
You know, like, I also like Source Code as a
yeah.
premise, but I saw it like, you know, after it came to like DVD.
22 Jump Street.
Definitely gonna yep. see it.
How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Gonna wait because surprisingly I liked How to Train Your Dragons, but I didn't watch the TV show, so I'm not that.
I don't think the TV show is gonna factor in too much.
Maybe it does. I
yeah.
don't know. I'm not gonna risk it.
I'm sure Joe's not too excited about this one, but The Purge 2 is coming next summer.
Can't believe.
Already. I mean, it's an entirely new cast, so it's not like. I'm sure they just, as soon as the first one was done, they just started filming this one, but.
I mean, it'd be cool if it's, like, another house or something, you know, like, in the same Purge, but it's probably be, like, the next year.
I'm kind of hoping it's, like, kind of, like, Warriors style, where, like, someone's trapped outside, and they have to, like, fight their way through, like, the insane Purgers. Transformers, Age of Extinction. We haven't seen too much about that yet. I'm sure it's going to be, like, whatever the first big movie of the year, we're going to get probably a trailer for that. The reboot, but also sequel to the Transformers trilogy.
Can't wait to see it.
Finally.
Yeah, but I'm just going to question. It's not a really... Transformers 4 is not a reboot, though, right?
It takes place, like a couple years after the third one. But, like, no one from the first one's in it, and there's, like, basically an all-new cast of Transformers as well, besides, like, basically, Optimus is the
Prime.
Only one who's coming back, basically.
I thought Beetle was going to be back.
Bumblebee?
Bumblebee,
I think maybe, but, I mean, it's basically, like, all the human characters are completely different, because, like, it's Mark Wahlberg leading the way now.
But my question about it is, like, in the first three movies, they pretty much acknowledge where robots were, surprisingly, everywhere in the Earth. And then on the moon, and now in this one, it's like, oh, we also had more dinosaur bots that we could use in prior events?
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't know how they're going to sneak that in.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The first one was shockingly great. It was like the biggest surprise of that summer. So I'm definitely super excited for this one. Jupiter Ascending, the latest from the Wachowskis.
The, like, Channing Tatum elf man.
Space elf, yeah.
Space elf.
It's either going to be awesome or a complete disaster.
Right, right.
I think we already mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy is coming up, like, later in the summer. I hope we get a trailer for that sometime soon, because they showed off, like, the first sort of, like, official picture. But yeah, I mean, I kind of want to see just exactly what the hell's going on with that movie. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reimagining reboot is supposed to come out next year, coming from Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes studio. I know. What do you think about that one, Chris?
I don't know. Like, it's a crapshoot. Yep.
I think we need a trailer just to see like what the tone of it is. If it's gonna be like completely goofy, or if it's gonna be kind of like more like the original comics, or more like the cartoon, or what the hell's going on with it. If it's more, I mean, it's more like a Nickelodeon show, I don't know. definitely a big one for us, Expendables 3. Jamming even more people into it. Like Wesley Snipes, and Antonio Banderas, and Mel Gibson, and Harrison Ford, and...
It's basically just half the cast of Machete Kills.
Yep. They just went over to the next set. Sin City 2 is supposed to come out next year. Sin City: A Dame to Kill For, which I believe is a prequel to Sin City.
It could be like one of those like 300 things where it's like a prequel and then like a sequel. Yeah.
Like the end of the year is kind of not. It's kind of like up in the air, so we haven't really seen anything about anything coming out later in the year, but there's a couple, like, the new Dracula movie is supposed to come out.
Oh, God. Another Dracula.
Big Hero 6, which is the big Disney animated Marvel movie. Interstellar, which is the latest Christopher Nolan. We saw that one, like, trailer like, Matthew McConaughey just, like, lecturing about, like, space. Dumb and Dumber 2 is supposed to come out.
Yeah.
Hey,
there was a movie called When Harry Met Lloyd.
Oh, God, don't even mention that. Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, the part one of the epic conclusion to the Hunger Games quadrilogy, I don't know. that book was insane. Like, I don't know how they're going to make that into a movie. Because it's basically like, well, it's basically like a full-on, like, crazy war book, and there's, like, lizard men who are attacking them, and, like, there's full-on, like, battles where people are getting blown to pieces and, like, firebombing people. It's just like, I don't know how this made PG-13. Horrible Bosses 2 is supposed to come out.
I don't think it deserves a sequel, but...
And it seems like, it seems like Christoph Waltz is going to be the only, like, new boss, possibly. This is like Kevin Spacey and Jennifer Aniston are supposed to come back. The conclusion to The Hobbit, Hobbit There and Back Again.
Yeah, I didn't watch the...
Like, eventually you should probably watch those, Chris. So.
I watched the first one. So, I didn't just watch, like, the newest one.
Oh, my God. The Hip-Hop Annie is supposed to come out.
Hip-Hop Annie. Oh, my. That's
like, Jamie Foxx's Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, no.
And the girl from, oh, God, what the hell was the name of that movie? It was, like, a big, like, Oscar darling last year. Beast of the Southern Wild. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Those are, like, probably the big ones for next year. There's a couple, like, other ones coming out, but, I mean, definitely seems like some good stuff coming, but, like, it definitely is just kind of like the countdown to 2015 when, like, the shit hits the fan. Would you say, Chris?
What?
I was just saying, once you agree, because we're basically at this point, we're just waiting for 2015 to get here because it's gonna.
Like I said, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that they announced shit for 2015 before 2013 was even like almost like done.
You basically have the entire reschedule for 2015 now.
Yep.
And it's all just like ginormous blockbusters every week. But yeah, I'm pretty much going to do it for this week's show, I think. If you want to go on a site and check out all of our top 10 lists, they're all up there, or they should be up there by the time you read this, or listen to this, and, we'll have our worst lists up there, probably by the time you hear this, and, we'll be back next week with the first normal show of 2014. And hopefully there's some news to talk about and some other stuff. If you want more from us, you can go to www.everythingaction.com for the aforementioned lists and all of our regular features and other podcast episodes, other commentaries and stuff like that. You can also head over to facebook.com/everything.action for our Facebook page, twitter.com/evaction for our Twitter account, everythingaction.tumblr.com as our Tumblr. You can find us on iTunes by searching for us. Everything actually in iTunes, you can get our app in there as well, and as well as the podcast episodes and counters and all that stuff. You can subscribe to us, rate us, leave us some reviews. And email us at contact@everythingaction.com. And you can also download or stream the episodes on Stitch.com. You should go over there and search for us. So for Chris and Joe, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week.